Could the figures found at Göbekli Tepe and in other parts of the globe be a record carved in stone of an ancient alien race that existed prior to a catastrophic event? Ancient astronaut theorists say yes.
Perhaps Göbekli Tepe is the place where Noah and his descendants disembarked and recreated civilization after the flood.
Ancient astronaut theorists suggest that perhaps it was an attempt to obscure the truth about humankind's otherworldly origins.
Is the moon made of cheese and populated by rainbow unicorns?
Ancient astronaut theorists say yes.
Hi everyone. Today we're going to look at the History Channel show, Ancient Aliens. We're not going to go through a whole episode, that would take hours, but I'm going to pull out examples and illustrations of how Ancient Aliens creates compelling and believable cases for theories that have little to no credibility. First, because we're not going through the whole show, a brief summary of what happens in this particular episode. I'm looking at Season 12, Episode 16, Return to Göbekli Tepe. Throughout this episode, it is argued that the Neolithic site of Göbekli Tepe is evidence for a lost civilization that was not only genetically engineered by aliens, through a breeding program naturally, but was almost wiped out by some kind of gigantic cataclysm at the end of the last ice age, which is either a flood, a meteor, or maybe both. They're not terribly clear. This civilization survived through hiding in an underground city, very practical for avoiding a flood, which is actually Noah's Ark, and or by building an ark like Noah's Ark, which didn't actually exist because it was an underground city. We'll get to that. Göbekli Tepe itself, according to the episode, was built to track the movement of the star from which humanity's alien progenitors originated. I won't really deal with the astronomical information, because I'm not an astronomer, but I will say that the main expert they have on to talk about it is also not an astronomer. He's a geologist. Confused yet? You will be.
While plowing his field, shepherd Savak Yildiz spots a strangely shaped stone protruding from the ground. After brushing away the dirt, he realizes that it may be part of a much larger object. Shortly after contacting the local museum with his find, he is visited by Klaus Schmidt from the German Archaeological Institute.
It wasn't until German archaeologist Klaus Schmidt visited the site and began digging, they realized what was really at the site.
What he discovered was mind-blowing. After discovering the first T-shaped pillar buried at the site, he soon found more of these massive structures.
So, the introduction here sets up a pretty reasonable description of the discovery of Göbekli Tepe and the initiation of excavation. But the very first expert they interview is a man named Hugh Newman, not an archaeologist or anyone remotely associated with the academic study of the site. But what he says is pretty reasonable. And then we move on to William Henry, also not an archaeologist or remotely associated with the site, and he continues this very reasonable, mostly factual narration of events. The narrator continues to describe the archaeological excavation of the site, again, all pretty reasonable. However, it's worth emphasising that we've had two experts already introduced by the show. No one related to the site, and no one with any archaeological credentials. The first thing I want to point out to you is the very clever use of expert interviews, and I use the term expert relatively loosely. Ancient Aliens typically juxtaposes legitimate, trained archaeologists with ancient alien theorists. This lends academic authority to the latter, who appear to have all the definitive, conclusive answers to questions posed by the show. The former are all responsible scholars who are unwilling to make assertions that they can't prove. Because of that, they end up saying things like, we don't know, or we can't be sure, which makes the academic institutions seem entirely incompetent, and by association, makes the ancient alien theorists seem even more believable. Let's take a look at this in action.
It's very difficult to know what the purpose of something like Göbekli Tepe could be. And certainly Klaus Schmidt had not reached any conclusions, except that it's clearly not a settlement, it's not a village, there is absolutely no domestic refuse. Schmidt always hoped that it was funerary and that there would be burials underneath the walls or underneath some of the pillars or so on, but so far they have not yet found any human remains at the site. There are no domestic plants in the site, there are only wild animal bones. Inevitably, in archaeology, if we don't know what something is for, we think of ritual. But really, it's pure speculation.
So the third expert introduced here is actually someone with archaeological training. I know, big surprise. Dr. Paul Barn has a PhD from Cambridge, and he continues with the description of the site. Everything so far has been pretty legitimate. The description of the site, he mentions the pillars and the carvings, and we've even had an actual archaeologist. However, here's where things start to get weird, and here's where they really start misusing and misrepresenting the only expert they've had on so far. Here we have an actual archaeologist with a PhD who focuses on prehistoric art, and he says that a ritual interpretation of the site is pure speculation, and that the original excavator of the site, Klaus Schmidt, couldn't find any evidence for it being a necropolis. Dr. Barn is an academic expert. He has been highly trained, and, as such, is likely to be very uncomfortable in making claims that he can't prove. He most likely doesn't feel comfortable assigning a purpose to the site, and he essentially says so, because he's a responsible scholar. Unfortunately for him, and for us, the ancient alien theorists have no such moral or ethical qualms.
Well, the site of Göbekli Tepe really did send shockwaves through the whole world of early prehistory, because we'd never before known or imagined even that simple hunter-gatherers could produce such spectacular monumental structures. Now, in archaeology, really since it began, we've always assumed that hunter-gatherers were capable of producing wonderful works of art, rock art, cave art, and things like that, but we never imagined that they could come together in sufficient numbers to make monumental constructions like Göbekli Tepe.
But if the currently accepted timeline for mankind's advancement is correct, is it possible that primitive hunter-gatherers could have built such sophisticated megalithic structures?
What we have here is an actual scholarly expert illustrating ways in which the field of archaeology does get things wrong. Which it does. No scholar is infallible, and the way in which academia moves forward is through new discoveries and correcting old theories and assumptions. This is the major problem with being an academic in the world of alien theorists. Generally speaking, academics are not comfortable making sweeping statements or grand claims unless we know for a fact that we can back it up with evidence that will withstand scrutiny from our peers. It's the whole point of peer review. People like these theorists have no compunctions about making definitive statements about, for example, aliens genetically modifying humans, because not only do they have no academic integrity, but their careers will not suffer as a result of such ridiculous, unfounded statements. In fact, quite the opposite is true. If you write a book about ancient aliens, then of course you're going to stick to your story no matter what evidence to the contrary is thrown at you. Because if you even suggest that you may be wrong, it's going to be horrifically bad for your business.
There are such an incredible range of animals and birds and insects depicted at Göbekli Tepe, the like of which we have never seen at that period anywhere else in the world. And to have a whole bunch of them together is interesting. You can speculate till the cows come home as to what it might represent. We have not the faintest idea.
And we see some very strange animals portrayed on the pillars at Göbekli Tepe, almost as if it's a record of Noah's Ark itself. Perhaps Göbekli Tepe is the place where Noah and his descendants disembarked and recreated civilization after the flood.
So what viewers are presented with here is an archaeologist saying, we don't really know, and an ancient alien theorist saying, we probably know, and it's most definitely aliens. Who are you going to believe as someone who has absolutely no experience in the field? probably the alien theorist, because they are certain in what they're saying and they're providing definitive answers, where the archaeologist is mostly providing questions. Let's just take a quick look at the experts and experts included in this episode and their educational credentials. We have Hugh Newman. I could find no educational information about him online, and is described as a world explorer. I'm not entirely sure what that is. We have William Henry, an author, investigative mythologist, art historian, and TV presenter. He also leads luxury ascension tours around Egypt, France, Italy, and the UK. Next up is Andrew Collins. He's a science and history writer, and the author of books that challenge the way we perceive the past. Sounds like pseudo-archaeology to me. This is from andrewcollins.com, by the way, and has absolutely no formal education. I should state here that there's nothing wrong with not having any formal education. There is something wrong with then presenting yourself as an expert on things you have absolutely no clue about. Next, we have David Hatcher Childress. He's the owner of Adventures Unlimited Press and a rogue archaeologist. He did start an archaeology degree at the University of Montana, Missoula, but left at age 19. The fact that he left so early is heavily glossed over in his website, which reads that he attended the University of Montana, where his studies in Oriental culture and philosophy led him to a job teaching English in Taiwan. At age 19, having not graduated and really not done an awful lot of studying either. We have, most famously, Giorgio Tsoukalos, who has a BA in Sports Information and Communication from Ithaca College, definitely highly qualified to talk about archaeology. We also have Rabbi Ariel Ben-Sadok, who studied Jungian psychology. Eric von Daniken, an author who's also been convicted on several counts of fraud and embezzlement and has absolutely no educational information that I can find online. We do also have several PhDs among the cast. First is Jonathan Young, who's a psychologist and graduated from Alliant International University. He's associated with the mythologist Joseph Campbell, and his work focuses on folklore and mythology. So super qualified to talk about archaeology and history then. Great job, guys. There's also Dr. Robert Schoch, who's on faculty at the College of General Studies at Boston University. He has a PhD in geology and geophysics from Yale, a BA in anthropology, BS in geology, and an MPhil in geology and geophysics. This is the gentleman who they get on to talk about astronomy. He's a geologist, not an astronomer. And finally, we have Dr. Paul Barn, who has a PhD from Cambridge, graduated 1979, and works mainly in prehistoric art, and co-authored the textbook Archaeology, Theories, Methods, and Practice. There's also Dr. Ed Barnhart, who has a PhD from the University of Texas at Austin, and is the director of Mayan Exploration Center. He's brought on later in the episode to talk about the Mayan statue. As we can see, many of these experts actually aren't experts at all. They're people who have written books about alien theories, about ley lines, about all kinds of very interesting, but ultimately fictional, mystical and spiritual phenomena. There are four PhDs among the cast of today's episode. We have one psychologist who speaks about mythology as if it's an historical fact. We have a geologist who talks about astronomy, and the other two are archaeologists who were drafted in to lend credibility to the show, but also used to make the alien theorists seem like they have answers where mainstream archaeology simply doesn't. Perhaps the most compelling part of Ancient Aliens is that it includes actual archaeological and historical evidence, or rather, it includes the misuse of actual archaeological and historical evidence. By taking factual information and combining it in creative ways, or even outright making shit up, the show not only intentionally misleads viewers, it crafts a very compelling narrative. This is, like, most of the episode, so we'll spend a while on this.
Intrigued by evidence that the structure might go back to a Neolithic period, Klaus Schmidt has the sediment layers of the site radiocarbon dated. The results indicated that the stone structures could be as much as 12,000 years old, more than 5,000 years older than mankind's first known civilization in Mesopotamia.
So here we've been presented with factual information. Göbekli Tepe is Neolithic, and it is older than the foundation of the first cities in Mesopotamia. The dishonest part of this clip is that they use an image of what looks like a Neo-Assyrian statue to illustrate the Mesopotamian civilization part of the narrative. The Neo-Assyrian Empire is at the late end of Mesopotamian history, like the 9th through the 7th century BCE. While Mesopotamian civilization, for argument's sake, the existence of the first city of Uruk, is a few thousand years beforehand, at the end of the 4th millennium BCE. The statue is from Mesopotamia, but comparing it in any way to a product of the first civilization is absolutely ridiculous. It's as if you were presenting on the city of Rome during the 1st century AD and show a picture of the modern city of Rome. I mean, technically, yes, the two are related, but they're not the same and definitely shouldn't be compared in an academic or even pseudo-academic setting.
Göbekli Tepe could be the smoking gun of a lost civilization, because it confirms that at the time of the last ice age, there was high culture existing in the world. This is something that had been speculated for many years, but there had not been the absolute evidence. Now we could have it. These engineering skills, this ordering of society is something that must have existed before the end of the last ice age. And arguably even earlier.
So this clip is very similar to the previous example. While Andrew Collins is talking about Neolithic society, what we have are scenes of this beautiful monumental building, large settlements and, of course, Göbekli Tepe. This is incredibly dishonest, because what they're doing is strongly insinuating that because the Neolithic people were able to create Göbekli Tepe, something that did surprise archaeologists who work on this time period, they must also have been able to build these large settlements and monumental buildings. The really frustrating thing is that he's not entirely wrong. Göbekli Tepe has given archaeologists cause to re-examine their understanding of Neolithic society and provides evidence for extensive cooperation between small groups of hunter-gatherers. It's not evidence that there was a large urbanized population that built entire cities and monumental buildings prior to the Ice Age.
More than one-third of the statues contain elaborate carvings of animals, including various mammals, reptiles, insects, and birds. But also included are depictions of species not indigenous to the area, like geese, armadillos, and wild boar.
The pillars do include amazing carvings, but that second part about how some of the animals aren't indigenous to the area, it's completely false. According to Jens Notroff, an archaeologist who actually works at the site, all of the animals depicted are, indeed, native to the area. And by the way, how on earth is that an armadillo? Have you seen an armadillo? They don't look like that.
There are such an incredible range of animals and birds and insects depicted at Göbekli Tepe, the like of which we have never seen at that period anywhere else in the world. And to have a whole bunch of them together is interesting. You can speculate till the cows come home as to what it might represent. We have not the faintest idea.
Here we again have Dr. Barn being used to authenticate a ridiculous claim. By combining his statements about the amazing variety of animals shown with the claim that there are depictions of non-indigenous creatures, authority and legitimacy is lent to the lie, even though Dr. Barn never actually said it. This next section is a bit more of a case study, an in-depth case study, really, of how Ancient Aliens takes historical archaeological evidence and horribly distorts everything about it in order to try and make their case.
According to ancient astronaut theorists, proof of a lost civilization exists some 300 miles away from Göbekli Tepe, in the form of a vast underground city known as Derinkuyu. It extends some 13 stories underground and had the capacity to support 20,000 people. Although the site has yet to be scientifically dated, some researchers have suggested that it may have served as a prehistoric refuge.
I'm going to save some time here and skip ahead, but they're basically arguing that Derinkuyu was created in its entirety during prehistoric times as a shelter to save a group of people from some kind of natural disaster. I think in this case, a meteor hitting the Earth. The problem is with this statement.
Although the site has yet to be scientifically dated.
It has yet to be scientifically dated. I can find little peer-reviewed information in English, but the little amount of information I have found suggests that the earliest use of these caves occurs during the 7th century BCE, not the prehistoric period. and that the vast majority of the site was constructed during the Byzantine Empire, which lasts from 330 to 1453 CE, dates approximate.
Arancio is a multi-levelled city that has existed since time immemorial. It was certainly used during Christian times, but there's also evidence that there's prehistoric activity going on at these places. Archaeologists found evidence of Stone Age tools going back to the Paleolithic era.
The show mentions the discovery of Stone Age tools, which is possible, but I can't find any mention of that anywhere at all, except in this episode. What Ancient Aliens is doing here is taking a small amount of, hopefully, factual information, which would be the presence of Paleolithic objects somewhere in the site, and heavily implying that the entirety of the structure was created during that same time period. In fact, this really doesn't seem to be the case, and if there was prehistoric occupation, it was probably in one or two areas, and then in later time periods like the 7th century or the Byzantine Empire, the whole settlement was really expanded.
And we're told that as many as 20,000 people, perhaps even as much as 60,000, could have lived here at any one time.
Not only is there evidence that these caves once housed thousands of people, but archaeologists have found air vents and water wells that would have made it possible to live underground for years at a time.
These were cut deeply into the rock, sometimes for hundreds of yards in depth. And at the base of them were wells that provided water to these underground populations.
Ancient Aliens also seems here to inflate both the size of the settlement and the technological achievement of Derinkuyu. The information I've been able to find online suggests that the city is actually only around five floors, with the lower floors being only a few rooms, and that a much more reasonable estimate of the population that could be supported is around 2,000, not 20,000. They heavily emphasise the creation and use of a ventilation system, which does exist, but is confined to shallow shafts and openings in each of the upper levels. One single central shaft exists for the lower floors, which is all that's needed as there's only a few rooms as you go further down. While the creation of Derinkuyu is clearly a magnificent achievement, I don't think I could create an underground city without some kind of power tools. It's actually not as amazing as Ancient Aliens would like you to believe. The caves are carved into a kind of stone called tuff, which, Wikipedia reliably informs me, is a type of rock made from volcanic ash ejected from a vent during a volcanic eruption. It's soft, easy to carve, and the area in which Derinkuyu is located, Cappadocia, contains many, many such underground dwellings carved into the tuff. It's not like they were carved into granite or basalt. Derinkuyu is not an isolated instance. There are at least 25 underground cities in the surrounding area. Incidentally, the same is true for the carved pillars at Göbekli Tepe. They're not carved from tuff, but they're carved from relatively soft limestone. Jens Notroff, one of the archaeologists that works on the site, says that the limestone can be easily carved with the flint that's also found at the site. While an impressive achievement, the creation of Göbekli Tepe and the amazing carvings represented there is still well within the realm of human accomplishment. They didn't need some kind of mystical technology from Ancient Aliens. It's just human ingenuity. Ancient Aliens doesn't stop at misusing archaeological evidence, however. They pull ancient texts into the mix as well. This clip is going to give a bit of information about Zoroastrianism, and we'll use Zoroastrian texts to try and argue that the site of Derinkuyu is a shelter actually described in the Persian manuscripts. Before we get to it, I do want to point out a couple of things. First, they're using a mythological text as a record of historical fact. No, just no. Second, the text that they're trying to use to explain a supposedly Neolithic site, let's say 4500 BCE for argument's sake, dates to between 141 BCE and 224 CE. That's over 4,000 years after the creation of Derinkuyu, if it was created during the Paleolithic period, which I don't think it was. What evidence is there that these two things are even connected? Is there some kind of statement in the text that these events took place in Turkey? Or archaeological evidence of contact between the two regions? I'm guessing not. And you can't just make up these kinds of assertions without providing compelling evidence to prove your point. Citation needed.
Zoroastrianism is one of the world's oldest monotheistic religions. Founded by the prophet Zoroaster in ancient Iran approximately 3,500 years ago. The central figure of the religion was a powerful god named Ahura Mazda, who is often depicted seated inside a winged disc. According to the story recorded in a text known as the Vendidad, he sent a powerful warning to a young priest named Yima about a coming cataclysm.
Ahura Mazda told the great early king Yima that there would be a terrible disaster. A giant serpent would descend from the heavens to the earth. Well, that sounds like a comet or a large meteorite falling to earth. And a winter would come such as has never been known.
Prior to the event, Yima is given very specific instructions to build an underground shelter in order to survive the coming giant freeze.
Let's pause for a second because I want you to remember this. This interpretation is that a meteor will fall to Earth and create an ice age. Deren Kuyu is therefore a shelter from that incident.
Ahura Mazda instructs Yima to build a vara, an underground hall of sorts where things can be protected from the terrible winter. Yima was to hide a remnant of the people and an extensive seed bank, also a pair of each of the animal species.
You can see where this is going, right? Natural disaster, two of every animal. It's the Persian Noah!
Could it be that the story of Noah's Ark and the Vara of Zoroastrianism are one and the same? And the reference to an ark was later misunderstood to be a large ship.
Clearly, because there are similar stories in different cultures, it must have happened. Remember this bit too. They are suggesting that there wasn't an actual boat, that this boat was actually a later misunderstanding of the underground city. This is important, and you'll see why soon.
But if these accounts are in fact true, how is it that mankind had enough advanced warning to build such sophisticated places of refuge?
The ancient texts are very clear that the gods, they always warned people that this catastrophe would happen. So how was that possible?
Because it's mythology. It's not historical fact. It's a mythological text. See? Wasn't that easy?
Well, either they had access to sophisticated technologies with which to predict the weather, or what's the other option? And if you combine that with the fact that Ahura Mazda was known to have descended from the sky in a vehicle with fixed wings, it looks like some type of flying device. That would suggest that he was in fact an extraterrestrial.
Oh, my mistake, it was aliens. Clearly. Now, you remember that I told you to take note of a couple of things. One, the natural disaster that the inhabitants of Deren Kuyu were hiding from was a meteor and an ice age. Two, Deren Kuyu is actually the same as Noah's Ark. The interpretation of a boat is a later misunderstanding of the text. So, Noah's Ark didn't exist. And there's been no flood mentioned at all so far.
In the story of Noah's Ark, we're told that after the deluge, Noah's Ark lands at Mount Ararat in eastern Turkey, not far from Göbekli Tepe, and we see some very strange animals portrayed on the pillars at Göbekli Tepe, almost as if it's a record of Noah's Ark itself. Perhaps Göbekli Tepe is the place where Noah and his descendants disembarked and recreated civilization after the flood.
Wait, what? What about Deren Kuyu? I thought the disaster everyone was hiding from was the Ice Age. I thought there was no boat. It's a misunderstanding of the underground city.
If there really is a connection between Göbekli Tepe and the biblical story of a great flood, could the carvings found at the site be an inventory of the animals that were rescued? Ancient astronaut theorists say yes, but also suggest other carvings depict a species not of this Earth.
Nope. Somehow there is a meteor and an ice age and an underground city, but also a flood and a giant boat. I sure as hell hope that the global flood happened before the inhabitants of Derinkuyu went to live underground. This provides a nice segue into our next section that I like to call These Things Look the Same. Here, the show uses very basic superficial similarities between statues from all over the world to argue that many ancient cultures had contact with the same aliens, and they were actually part of a single global culture.
They have low relief arms that come round to the front and end in these long spindly fingers.
An interesting feature about some of these T-shaped pillars is the fact that these arms culminate in the front around the navel area. And what I find so cool is that this type of motif can be found elsewhere around the world.
Let's take note, everyone. We're looking for statues with arms and hands that are positioned at the statue's navel. Let's look at the contenders.
For example, in Easter Island, with those giant statues, the Mohai. There too, the arms go around the belly and they culminate in front of the navel.
Okay, Easter Island statues. I wouldn't say that the hands culminate in front of the navel, but okay, I see where you're coming from.
And then, at Tiwanaku, Bolivia, for example, there is a statue that has the exact same hand position in front of the navel.
Well, I wouldn't call that exactly the same. It looks more like the hands are in front of the chest. Also, he's holding stuff and he doesn't have long spindly fingers. He does definitely have arms and hands, though.
We get very similar type of carved pillars as Göbekli Tepe in other parts of the world. There is a very strong similarity in style, which tells us that there is almost certainly some kind of relationship, that Göbekli Tepe is not in isolation. It's part of some kind of global culture, the remnants of a lost civilization that once existed in the prehistoric world.
I don't know about you, but I'd say that the only strong similarities I can see between these statues is that they're anthropomorphic and that they have arms and hands. Some are holding objects, some have hands in front of their navels, in front of their chests, or on their hips. Is this really what we're basing our claim of some kind of global pre-Ice Age culture on? If we are, then I have some more evidence to add. Clearly, this culture is still in existence because my daughter has a statue with the same strong similarities. See? It has arms and hands. Ancient Aliens also has what I like to call a house of cards approach to constructing an argument. They start with a hypothetical what-if statement or assumption, which they then simply treat as fact and then use as basis for the construction of an elaborate and typically far-fetched explanation. Assumption number one. The T-shaped pillars at Göbekli Tepe, and strangely similar statues from around the world, depict ancient aliens. Assumption number two. The sites where these are found are the locations where human survivors emerged after the Great Flood. Remember, the one that the inhabitants of Derinkuyu escaped by living underground. After those two massive assumptions, the show moves on to looking at a totem pole. Now, as we're going to see, it's so heavily disfigured that it's very challenging to know exactly what these figures are. But, naturally, ancient alien theorists have a suggestion.
This totem pole was found in Göbekli Tepe in 2010 by Klaus Schmidt and his team. The pole features three main motifs, one above another. The first motif is the head. The frontal side is oliverated. When we look on the side, you can see the neck of the head and ear. It doesn't look like a human being.
Right.
And you can see below the head, the arm and fingers holding another figure. But again, we cannot see the head of the second figure because also it is elaborated. You can see the arm and hand. And the third figure look like a human baby.
So, we have a heavily disfigured stone totem pole with at least one figure that the curator doesn't think depicts a human being. This is, according to ancient aliens theorists, evidence for a deliberate attempt to hide the truth of humanity's extraterrestrial origins.
If the stone column found at Göbekli Tepe represents a genetic lineage, just why were two of the figures deliberately defaced? Ancient astronaut theorists suggest that perhaps it was an attempt to obscure the truth about humankind's otherworldly origins.
What's curious about this totem pole is that there is essentially a larger being, perhaps an extraterrestrial, that has its hands around this other being that isn't exactly human but has human-like characteristics, could be a primitive human. This figure appears to be giving birth, and the baby that is emerging from this mother's womb is clearly a human baby with a human face.
I mean, it's clearly a human baby in that it has a round head and eye sockets.
This suggests possibly that a breeding experiment took place leading to the development of modern humans as we now know them.
So, what are we left with? We have an assumption that the T-shaped pillars depict aliens. We have an assumption that Göbekli Tepe was created by survivors of Noah's flood. We have a huge assumption that the iconography of this totem pole shows a breeding experiment between aliens and early humans that ended up with the creation of Homo sapiens. Because of all of these assumptions, they arrive at the definitive conclusion that Göbekli Tepe was built to tell future generations about humanity's alien heritage.
And so if we have a genealogical record in this pillar at Göbekli Tepe, and we follow the ultimate extension of it, and we realize that what they're possibly telling us is their ancestors were non-human.
So you have to wonder, the whole idea was to preserve information from our extraterrestrial past so that future generations would ultimately decode the information that's there. Information possibly about our extraterrestrial creators.
There's absolutely no actual evidence for this. It's all just a massive house of cards. If you remember not only that there's no evidence that the T-shaped pillars depict aliens and that the totem pole is heavily damaged, then you realize that this argument is entirely speculative and based on zero actual evidence. In fact, the archaeologists working at Göbekli Tepe argue that the top figure on the totem pole depicts some kind of predator, either a bear or a large felid. I mean, you can see the ears. The second figure is more obscure, but maybe a human, which seems reasonable as the hands of this figure are placed in the same configuration as those on the T-shaped pillars. I'm going to note here that comparing the totem pole to the anthropomorphic figures is a valid comparison, while the comparison of the pillars to the Easter Island statues is not. The totem and the pillars are from the same site, ostensibly created by a people with a shared culture. They have a demonstrable connection. The pillars and the Easter Island statues are entirely separate and have no connection at all. The arms of the second figure hold the head of the final figure, which appears, archaeologists say, to be giving birth. The motif of a wild animal, the bear, the first figure in the totem pole, holding a human head is known from several sculptures from the nearby site of Nivali Kori, as well as Göbekli Tepe, providing parallels to the first and second figures on the totem pole. It seems unlikely, then, that this totem pole illustrates the creation of modern humanity via a breeding experiment with ancient aliens. If we take away those initial assumptions about the depictions of aliens at the site, both the pillars and the totem pole, the house of cards just comes falling down. As I said, the rest of the episode does include a lot of information about the orientation of the enclosures at Göbekli Tepe and astronomy. I'm not an astronomer, I'm not even remotely qualified to speak about that, so I'm not going to touch it. But I'm also going to reiterate that the person who does speak about it is also not an astronomer, and also not in the least bit qualified to speak about it either. Göbekli Tepe was almost certainly not intended to point the way to the celestial home of humanity's ancient progenitors. And I think that the archaeological evidence actually points to much more interesting possibilities than this. Possibilities that are rooted in fact rather than fiction and show the amazing ingenuity of humanity rather than what humans can achieve when directed by alien overlords. Göbekli Tepe provides evidence for large-scale cooperation between Neolithic hunter-gatherer groups, something that was previously unthought of by scholars. That's amazing. That's progress. That's how academia works. Those groups of people not only erected multiple stone enclosures, they continually rearranged them for purposes as yet unknown. Each enclosure has its own unique character, with certain animals being predominant in different circles. The religious, ritual, or mythological significance of this remains obscure at this moment, but that's part of the excitement. There's also extensive evidence for feasting at Göbekli Tepe, with the presence of large quantities of animal bones, suggesting that the people who worked together to produce these amazing structures also ate together, sharing social activities that would have strengthened the social bonds necessary to achieve all that they did. There's also the strong possibility that, while no human remains have been found, the site was incorporated into some kind of death or ancestor cult, as evidenced by the predominance of human heads and headless humans depicted on the iconography. One possible explanation is that the site was used for sky burials. There is so much left to discover at the site, and hopefully advances in archaeological theory and practice will help future scholars gain a better understanding than the one we currently have. Thank you so much for watching. I really enjoyed putting this together and I hope you found it interesting and somewhat enlightening. If you're new to the channel and enjoyed this, please consider subscribing. If you enjoyed the video, then definitely hit the like button. And if you feel like supporting Digital Hammurabi, then there are details of how you can do that in the description box below. We're also raising money for a scholarship program to send a PhD student on a summer research trip. That's what everything our Patreon raises will go towards. And even if you can contribute just a little bit, we'd be really, really thrilled to have you on board.